Happy New Year. Welcome to the Collective Table. I'm Dana Black, and this is Chelsea Simon.
Hi there.
If you're curious about how we got to this place, we invite you to check out our website, thecollectivetable.org. There's an intro video there, and it will tell you a little bit about how we transitioned to this space. Let's get started on today's conversation. We have a lot to go through today.
It's a good one.
It's a good one. And so with that, my first question is, are your Christmas decorations down? Because I know in my house, they came down New Year's Day.
Yeah, my son Max, who's 2.5, really loves Christmas. This was the year that he like got it, you know? Yeah. And so we've had to slowly take down our Christmas trees. I was afraid of like Christmas withdrawal or something like that. So we're still a little bit in the process of unwinding Christmas.
Of unwinding. And ours are already down. New Year's Day, our kids are older. We've always kind of New Year's Day, that's it. And a part of our Christmas decoration, I know it's a part of yours as well, is the Nativity.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Nativity, there's these three figures. We call them the wise men or the magi, same word.
Right. So if you have a lot of people have nativity scenes, but if you don't know what it is, it's kind of this manger that has Mary and Joseph, which are Jesus's parents. You have a little Jesus, yep. Maybe some animals and a shepherd. And then there's these three like other figures and known as the wise men or magi. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about what their story is. Where did they come from? Who were they? What do they have to teach us now today?
Excellent. And before we get into all that, we do want to say that our goal for today is that you leave learning something that you can find maybe in the mundane, ordinary parts of your life, the sacred or the holy moments.
Yeah.
And you may end up with more questions, and that's okay because we have questions all the time and we're not going to have answers all the time.
Yeah, questions are part of the journey just as much as, if not more so, than answers. Yeah.
Absolutely. So with that, the other word we have magi is epiphany.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about what Epiphany means and where that comes from.
Sure. So Epiphany is a day in the church that we celebrate, but it's also a season that runs until Lent or Ash Wednesday. And so Epiphany is a kind of a common word. You might use it as like, I had an epiphany. I had an idea.
Right.
Something was revealed to me that was before not known. And really that's what Epiphany means is a revealing.
I always say like the light bulb went on moment.
Right up here. Right. Yeah. And the day of Epiphany is really surrounded or as tied to this story of when the Magi came to see Jesus.
Right.
And so we won't read the scripture, but just to kind of give a brief overview for those that don't know, the story is found in Matthew's gospel, and we'll put the scripture below if you want to read it. But these wise men or magi from the east, they saw a star in the sky and they felt compelled to follow it, believing that at the end, the scripture, the prophecy of the Messiah, the Christ child, God coming to live with us on earth, would be beneath the star. And so they think, well, if the king is here, we'll go to the palace.
Right.
And so they stop.
Makes sense.
We'll stop by the palace, which at the time was King Herod. And King Herod wasn't the best of guys. We'll talk a little bit more about him in a little bit, but definitely a king that was interested in power and control and had an ego. And so when he hears that there might be another king, another person that might rival his power, gets a little nervous, tries to manipulate the wise men a bit and says, you know, the baby's not here, but when you find the baby, let me know exactly where he is so that I might go worship him too. Right. So the wise people knowing that the wise men knowing that the baby's not there, they continue to follow the star. And when they get to where the star is, they are at Mary and Joseph's house, which is Jesus's parents. And they see Jesus, the Christ child, and they kneel down and worship and they offer their gifts, which is the three gifts that we're typically, we sing about, that we know about. And then they have a dream, And the, in the dream, they are told to go home another way, to not go to King Herod's to tell him where the baby is, but to return a different route. And so you'll hear the theme, home another way, kind of throughout this episode too.
Right. And so we're gonna dig into the scripture. I did want to share just a favorite quote that I had as I read through and we did some research on Epiphany. It came out of a magazine that we enjoy, which is Sojourners. It was by a gentleman named Bill Wiley Kellerman. And he writes, Epiphany is about revelation, the kind of sudden brightness that lights up the landscape of a mind or community. Mm. And I think about the star that the Magi saw that night. And I think about the aha moments of maybe moving from the unconscious to the conscious experience. And we'll talk more about that, but it resonated with me.
Yeah, so. Happened in that story for sure.
So let's get to the Magi. We have a couple of characters in this scripture. We have the Magi, which we don't know if there was three, two, or four. It is plural, so there, at least there was more than one. Mm-hmm. And we also have King Herod. So let's talk about the Magi first.
So the Magi, yeah, like you said, we assume there's three because there's three gifts, and we've kind of embedded that into our tradition, but it's not found in the scripture. But there are more than one, and they're coming from the east. Some scholars think Persia, but they were traveling a long distance to follow the star. We know that they had some kind of status as they walked right into the palace and saw the king, which is an everyday experience for everybody. And we just assume that they were people that were seeking something, right? That they were wanting to follow the star. Another important part of the Magi were they were Gentiles.
They were Gentiles.
So in this time, the Jewish people really believed that the Jewish people were God's people. It was an in and out type of faith that if you weren't Jewish, you were out. And the story speaks to that. God is for everybody. God called the Gentiles to come and see the Christ child. And so that really speaks to, you know, kind of God's mission in the world of being for all people.
Yeah, and I think that's such an important element of this story is that God is for everyone, and that is showcased right here with the Magi who are not Jewish, mm-hmm. who are coming on a long, from a faraway place, and they are on what I call a faith journey. They're seeking.
Yeah.
That's a critical element of this particular story. And then we get to Herod. And we've already mentioned that Herod was not the greatest of guys, right? And I think really what I take away from this story with Herod is, he did some great things. Like he built some amazing architecture. I have a picture and I shared it with you when we took the kids to Israel a couple of years ago. And he built the aqueducts, which are still there today.
Oh, wow.
But then he also killed a bunch of people. Killed his wife, his kids. Tradition has it, and biblical scripture has it, that he killed the innocents, the children. Whether he did, it's not 100%, but that is written. It is tradition. So he was somebody who thrived on power and control.
Yeah.
He had power, he had control, and he did not want to lose it.
Yeah.
And so when the Magi come to him, that's his focus. He, whether it's through the legacy of building things or manipulation and killing people, he wants to control.
Yeah, and so there's this experience, right? The wise people see the star, and Herod has these wise people come and tell him about the king.
Right.
There's these experiences, and then they're left with a choice. How do I respond?
Yeah.
And they respond. They choose to respond differently.
Yeah.
The Magi respond with curiosity and humility and courage, right, to get on the journey.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that, about them being on the journey, how they got to do that in community, and probably that was such an important part of their journey together.
Exactly. We realize that we don't know if it was two, three, or four, but it was they. It was clearly plural, and here they are doing this long journey.
Right.
And I go back to, I have to think about this time period. They didn't have cars.
Right.
They didn't have paved roads.
Right.
They didn't have ways giving them the shortest route or hotels to stay in as they journeyed along, right? So this is tough.
I imagine they had to look at each other at one point and be like, dude, this is crazy.
Right.
Like, what are we doing? Yeah. But maybe they needed that, like to actually start the journey to say, but we're going to do it. You know, we're not going to let this fear paralyze us. We're going to let it propel us into what we feel we're being called for, forward.
Right. And so they have a very different response than King Herod, who, when he hears of the Messiah, the King of the Jews being born, he acts with manipulation and violence,
right?
So his fear becomes very, it's the opposite. It's not seeking with curiosity. It's not empathetic. It's just like, okay, how do I control what I already have?
Yeah,
how do I get rid of this?
Right. And it's not just King Herod. You know, if you actually do go and read the scriptures, it's Herod and the empire.
That's right.
And so I really think it does speak to our time. It parallels our time now where, you know, the rich and powerful want to protect the status quo. And when there comes something that is going to challenge that, we want to do everything to stop that. The rich and powerful want to keep control and power and status. And so that the whole empire was scared with him, I think speaks to today.
I totally agree. And I think it goes back to history continues to repeat itself.
Yeah.
We are a simple creature and we evolve very slowly. It takes us a lot of time. But yeah, it repeats itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people that have money, that have power, that have control, they want to maintain it because that's just, it's just what we have continued to see back then 2,000 years ago, and we see that again today.
Yeah. And I've read this story so many times, and what I think is so, you know, even in the midst of Herod's empire, which like what it had violence and oppression, that God reveals God's self in that time period. I think it's such a powerful example. No matter where we are, God reveals God's self to us.
Yeah.
And when I read this story again this time, what was kept striking me was that the wise men saw the star, that God used the star to invite them to a holy, sacred moment of kneeling at the Christ baby's, you know, feet.
Right. This ordinary thing that we would see any night.
Right. I mean, stars are always there.
Right.
But God uses ordinary things. And if you look throughout Jesus's ministry, Jesus was always using common elements. I mean, if we look at the communion table, what was on the table? It was bread and wine.
Yeah.
And he uses fish and light. And
right.
So there's just these common elements that God chooses to reveal God's self to us. And they're here now today, too.
That's right. And I love that take because it was a different angle to look at this story. And I thought about the end of the story where they have a dream.
Yeah.
God speaks to them a dream and tells them to go a different way. Again, a dream, something that we all have.
Yeah.
So God is using common elements in our everyday life to connect with us.
Yeah, and we have different responses to that. Everybody does. In every moment, people have different responses. Like I respond where I can recognize something as a holy moment, then the next moment not recognize it.
Right.
And the reminder is that it's all holy and it's all sacred and that our attention is what needs to change. And Brother Lawrence has this great thought about, I find God in doing the dishes just as much as I find God at the communion table. And so that there's this powerful image of God just is everywhere, breathed into everything. And it's for us to recognize.
And I think for me, that's important to hear because in my life, I mean, there's so much going on, right? I'm a mom, you're a mom, we're wives, we have husbands, we work, we go to school. I mean, and can I sit, you know, every day, do I sit down and, you know, carve out time? Sometimes I can't. I'm going to be honest with you.
Right.
I don't carve out time necessarily to spend 45 minutes to be in meditative prayer because somebody got sick or somebody had to go here and I've got to respond to that.
Yeah. And I think our job is to recognize that when your kid does get sick or when something does, you know, you get a flat tire, there's holiness in those things also.
How do I use that moment, right? Where is God trying to connect me? And we talked about some examples, and I loved yours, so I would love it if you'd share it.
And I will say that, you know, I was hesitant to share this, but I feel that this, you know, this work calls us to be authentic and vulnerable and but I was putting my son Max to bed a couple nights ago, and he's 2.5, and very much in the 2.5 phase. And then it's Christmas, so he has all this extra stuff going on with sugar highs and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But he's throwing his toys. It's bedtime. He's throwing his toys. He's trying to take off his pajamas. He's running around like a crazy kid, slamming himself on the ground. And I came to the end of myself, and I had this moment where it was like, I'm going to hurt him. Like I'm either trying to restrain him or stop him or just, you know, I'm at the place where I can't.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I go out into the living room and I see my husband and I say, I have to tag you in. Like you have to go. I can't do it.
Yeah.
And so he goes and of course, you know, Max sleeps like an angel the rest of the night.
Of course.
But I was telling you this story and I was just, you know, the mom guilt that comes with not I didn't capitalize on that holy moment of putting my kid to bed. And I was just, you know, what a bad Christian, what a bad mom, what, you know. And what you pointed out to me was like, maybe the holiness was in being vulnerable enough to ask your husband for help.
Yeah.
Like really submitting to my own humanness and knowing that I can't do it all.
Right.
And I have other people to help me there.
Yeah. Yes, and that's where I really saw the holiness, right? That's where I saw the moment, because I think we all, especially not me, as a mom, I felt that, right? Like I'm not being a good enough mom, or I'm not doing, and I'm this is the last time, or I only have so many times. But that's not being holy. That's shaming myself, right? But the holy moment was literally saying, I can't do this. Yeah. I need your help.
Yeah.
And I was just blown away by that. And then we kept talking, and that led us to a little acronym that we have that we're calling VEEP.
Right.
And because as we dissected that moment, we realized that there was a vulnerability to it. There was you sharing your fear.
Yeah.
I'm not good enough. I'm missing something. And then sharing with your husband, I can't do this.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
And then the next, the VE, the E is exploratory. What else can I do? Who else can I call in? What other help can I offer in this moment? And really being able to like survey the land and say, oh, Ryan, there you are. I need your help.
Exactly. It's seeking with curiosity. It's not judging yourself.
Right.
It's not saying, oh, I should use this moment to appreciate putting my son to bed because they're going to be gone soon when he turns 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. So it was seeking, it was asking for help, and it was, you know, not shaming yourself because of it.
And then the next E really is important too, because it's empathetic. It's like, what is the best thing for Max in that situation? It's not about solving all my mom guilt shame. It is about what is the best thing for Max. And I was not the best thing for Max in that moment.
No, he needed dad.
Yeah. He needed dad. And then he slept like an angel. Right. Yeah. So.
And P, our final one, is practice.
Right. So this is ongoing. Never going to master this kind of,
It's like the journey with the Magi, right? It's an ongoing thing. We're constantly practicing. We're constantly on a faith journey. We're constantly learning.
And it reminds me of like the practice of yoga or practice of meditation, which I'm awful at both of those things. But they reminded me that it's a practice of, because it's never a master of.
No.
You're always practicing
this
kind of work.
Yeah. And we thought about, okay, what's a time for me? And I started to think about it. And just the other day, our oldest son was headed back to Texas for his final semester in college. He's going to graduate in May as from Baylor University. And I think what's dawned on all of us, including him, is that his time here, he's going to stay in Texas. His time here is shrinking, right? He's not going to be here for the full summer, whatever it is. And he has a very close relationship with our two other kids. And it's just, we're all just weeping, right? As we're like hugging him, getting ready to take him to the airport. And you know, it's in those moments where you feel that pit. You don't want to feel it, right? But at the end of the day, I'm thinking in my mind, we got to let it go, and we've got to see the holiness in that, because I shared with him, we love you so much that this is how we've got to show it right now.
And it could have been easier to be like, get on the plane, we'll see you soon, like talk yourself down. Yeah.
You know, or we could have distracted ourselves. We could have said, okay, let's just go, you know, bye Trevor, let's go do something else. But we just sat in it.
Yeah, you got to lean into those moments.
Do.
Yeah.
And there's going to be many more of them. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to shy away from that kind of vulnerability.
Yeah.
So anyway, I did want to say that I think another example, and this I just thought about today, was being in community. And I think that's an important part of VEEP, is being in community, because we are in community and we have the relationship. And I know people can't see each other all the time right now, and we don't. We Zoom a lot. We talk on the phone a lot. We are able to do this cautiously and responsibly, but we talk and we get to share these moments. And I am so grateful. And they're holy moments.
Yeah, it goes back to the Magi. They had each other to be in community with as well, in the midst of fears and vulnerabilities and trusting, right?
Yeah.
And we can't be together, but. But there are ways, and it is important, because this is why we do faith together in community. It's so important to be picked up and have things revealed to us through other people's eyes, and to be like, you're not just such a bad mom. Just wait a minute here. Let's rethink this in a new way.
A new perspective, right? Which is that exploratory.
Yeah. So one of the things we always leave with trying to give people something to do, a tangible act to do. So we will put a downloadable worksheet about Veep, a little more explanation and ways that you can apply that. But we invite you to find an ordinary everyday moment in your life and try to apply the Veep acronym to it. And what would be really interesting is if you can do that in an honest and vulnerable way for yourself, find a friend that you can share it with. Not only will they offer you new perspectives and help pick you up, but it helps your relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, that vulnerable place where you're able to say, here's what I'm really afraid of. Here's what I'm really thinking. Just brings you closer.
I agree. So it is, these will be available on the website, but it's using those ordinary moments in your life to see what could be revealed or what could create a new light. And being able to do it with somebody is always very helpful.
Yeah. So. And we do want to say, if you have children at home and are looking for a resource to kind of teach them about the Magi or teach them about Reveal, Home by Another Way by Barbara Brown Taylor is a great children's book to kind of tell the story. And she's such a beautiful writer. And so we'll put a link to the book also so that you can check that out.
Excellent. Well, this has been wonderful for our first episode. We'll have our second episode in about 2 weeks, and we'll talk about baptism. So we'll see where that goes. We want to thank you for joining us. And if you enjoyed what you heard or you're excited about what's going on here, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, to check us out at thecollectivetable.org.
For the entire virtual collective package, including the video version of this episode, music from Mystic Mercy, art by Jennifer Jones, meditations with Erica Gibson, book suggestions, and other resources, visit thecollectivetable.org. The Collective Table is supported by San Diego United Methodist Church in Encinitas, California. The original music you heard was created and performed by Mystic Mercy. This episode was recorded and edited by Stephen Hale. If you'd like to financially support the work of The Collective Table, please visit thecollectivetable.org.